Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we will play our conversation with the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes. If you missed it yesterday, we were talking about the possibility that the Dolphins could trade Tyreek Hill. Could Kansas City be one of those landing spots?
I don't know about him going to the Chiefs, and I don't think the Dolphins are thinking of trading Tyreek Hill now, but if the season continues to go this way, obviously you'd have to think that all options will be on the table at that point in time. They're trying to turn things around. It's one game on the road in Indianapolis against a Colts team that hadn't won an opener in almost 4,400 days, that came in inspired with Jim Irsay being inducted into the Ring of Honor. I'm just up 4,400 days, Pat, but yeah. The Colts came out with the fury of 4,400 days of non-opening day wins behind them, and they laid out the Dolphins. So, but the Dolphins still think they have a good team.
So that was the latest from Adam Schefter of ESPN talking about Tyreek Hill. We'll obviously see how things progress and if he potentially is on the trading block. I think it's just quite simply a matter of time before we see some movement with Tyreek Hill, but it's very, very early on in the season to be having the conversation about a player who could possibly be traded. Again, we'll be joined by Patrick Mahomes coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll play our conversation with the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs. Rob, this is what I would like to get your thoughts on, your opinions on, before we play Mahomes. If you remember, the second game of the season is when the Chiefs started to make changes to their offensive line. The Chiefs had a plan heading into the regular season, and in the middle of their second game is when they sat down Kingsley Suamataia and really started kind of reorganizing some things seemingly on the fly. You cannot say that they had a great game up front, not when your right tackle was as penalized as he was in the matchup. This is not a one-time occurrence with him. This has been kind of regularly in his career that you have had to deal with these kind of issues. I'm going to be very, very intrigued to see if the Chiefs have a quick hook with Jawan Taylor, if you see a repeat of Friday night. If we are talking about in the third quarter that Jawan Taylor has two holding calls and a false start, and we're in the middle of the third quarter of a very tightly contested game, the same way that the Chiefs had a backup option and plan to get Kingsley out of there. Now, it didn't end up working until later in the season when they finally went to Joe Tooney, but they thought they had a plan with Wanya Morris, and they were not hesitant to pull the cord on that idea. Would they do the exact same thing if Sunday goes how Friday went and Jawan Taylor is not playing pretty well? You've got Jalen Moore there as a break in case of emergency, a very expensive break in case of an emergency. Could we see the Chiefs play with the same level of urgency on the right side that they did on the left side? And could you see them sit Jawan Taylor down and go to Jalen Moore?
I could 100% see it. Do I predict it? Do I anticipate it? No. But I think the Chiefs have shown through their actions they are fine with having an expensive player on the bench if they think the better player is on the field. It's not one for one, but I like your analogy with Kingsley from last year. Kingsley wasn't expensive, but Kingsley was a big investment. It was a second round pick, and they decided, no, this ain't going to work. We're going to try some Wanya. We're going to try some Tooney. We're going to sign, who did they sign? It was the DJ Humphreys. They tried everything when they pulled Kingsley. I could see them doing that with Jawan Taylor, but I don't believe that will happen because aren't the issues we saw with Jawan Taylor on Friday the same ones we've seen for 2-3 seasons now? Like, you can dislike what he's done with the false starts and the holdings and legal procedure. You can dislike it. You can think the league's picking on him. They might be picking on him. But this is not a one game, boy, he looks bad. We have a ready-made backup. Let's see what happens. This has been a consistent problem for Jawan Taylor's Chief career, and they have consistently said, Jawan's our right tackle. We're going to ride it out with Jawan. So I think I could see a scenario where they give up on Jawan, But I think it's very unlikely. It's like a 98-2. It doesn't happen because the same errors we've seen from the minute he signed the contract and played against the Lions are happening still, and they've never ejected on him, not once.
Yeah, but I guess to me, and I think where it's a little bit different is the only other option you had was Wanye Morris if you wanted to do that. Like, we can talk about sunk cost. I mean, at this point, you have either decided that Jalen Moore is going to be a sunk cost or Juwan Taylor is going to be a sunk cost. So if you're going to have a very expensive player sitting on your bench anyway, eating up cap space and money that you've already paid out, I think that Juwan could possibly be on the hook here. I mean, we are talking about a player that over the last 2.5 years has been called for 40 penalties. If you add up the yardage for Juwan Taylor, it is added up to almost 300 yards of negative plays that he has added up for the Kansas City Chiefs. It is hard to overcome that on a game-in, game-out basis. And right now, while I think we would agree, and you can be the biggest Chiefs fan in the world, I don't know how you could disagree with this next statement, their offense isn't good enough to overcome minus 30 yards from one player. You're going to have penalties from other players. Other guys get holding calls. Other guys, illegal block in the back. This thing happens. I'm talking about a football game here. Man, you can't afford the physical and mental mistakes, not from a veteran player. You can live with it with the Josh Simmons. He's a young guy. You can live with it with the Kingsley Suamataia. We're talking about a guy who is in the final year of his second contract and has played in multiple Super Bowls. You can't keep living with these negative plays, especially when you have an ability to eject from it and try something else.
I would love if they did it. I want that on the record. I would be a fan. I was the one this summer telling you if Juwan Taylor is doing exactly what he did in week one in camp, I would go to Jalen Moore. Jalen Moore's got a 2-year contract. He might be your right tackle this year and next year and just eat it on the cash with Juwan Taylor.
I actually don't see any scenario in which he's not their right tackle next year. I mean, they're certainly not moving Josh Simmons over to right tackle. So, I mean, I guess it's either one of the two things. Either Jalen Moore is going to play right tackle for him, or
they're going to cut
Jalen Moore, which, I mean, you gave him a lot of money to solely be a backup for you, and you got really no value for it, where, I mean, they're going to have to address the position at the end of the season anyway. You might as well address it with the guy that's been on the team.
So and I'm happy you said that. This is my point. If Jalen Moore is next year's right to believe, I would say most people believe, if Juwan Taylor keeps having performances like this, let's make the future now. Because even if Juwan Taylor was playing at an all-pro level over there, if he was Penei Sewell, if he was Lane Johnson, two things he's not, the Chiefs were going to eject on him at the end of the year. The way they massaged his contract, the way they did everything, they were always going to walk away from Juwan Taylor at the end of this year. So if you're always going to walk away from him and your plan next year is Jalen Moore at right tackle, then you have to have some level of faith that he can play right tackle in the NFL. And if Juwan Taylor keeps pumping out bad performances and keeps false starting at the level he has, then Jalen Moore needs to be your right tackle sooner rather than later. Because last year, their logic for pulling Kingsley is, we are a Super Bowl quality team and we can't have this level performance if we are going to be a Super Bowl quality type of team. I would say the same thing about Juwan Taylor. You are a Super Bowl capable type of team. If your right tackle can't figure out the snap count or line up onside or keeps getting grabby, then you're not a Super Bowl team. And a change needs to be made. And one is right there, ready made. Your right tackle of the future, so to speak, is sitting there. I would love to see them make the move, but I don't know how many times Juwan Taylor can do what he's done before the Chiefs see what everyone else sees.
I want to play this audio for you guys. This is Danan Hughes. He was talking about Xavier Worthy. So the Chiefs have made the decision that he is not going to go on the injury list. So that would be a mandatory 4 games that you would possibly miss. So the Chiefs feel pretty optimistic that Xavier Worthy is going to be able to play at some point in the next month. Here is Danan Hughes talking about how this is a pain management thing at this point.
The only concern that I have for Xavier Worthy in that day-to-day injury is because he's not a bulky guy. He's not a big receiver. He's not Juju Smith-Schuster. He's not DeAndre Hopkins. He's not the bigger, even Rashee Rice. So you kind of wonder about the fragility of it. But the pain tolerance itself. I played with 2 subluxating shoulders. And for all the medical people out there that know that, if you remember, now I'm really dating myself. Remember in Lethal Weapon with Mel Gibson?
Yeah, Rich,
when his shoulder popped out?
Uh-huh, yeah.
and he would hit it on the wall and pop it back in, that's because his shoulder was subluxating. That means it would pop in and out on a random. It doesn't matter if you hit somebody. It doesn't matter if you just made a quick movement. That's what can happen. I played with that. There were times where I had to like labor to actually lift my right arm above my head while I was running a route. And to get a ball that was thrown over my head that I had to like scream to myself just to pull my arm up above my head.
How painful is that?
And it's painful, but it's manageable.
Okay.
And the game is, I mean, that's how it is. Obviously, you know, the game is about managing pain.
There is a line in the 90s Cowboys doc that really jumped out to me. Funny enough, I was talking to Sean Barber about this when he was in studio a few days ago. For those of you that are older football fans, there was a game in which Emmitt Smith dislocated his shoulder against the Giants. And in the doc, Emmitt says how excited he was that this happened and that he didn't consider you a great player until you showed that you could still be great playing through an injury. And in that cut, it just got me thinking, like, these people are wired so much differently than us. Like, he is explaining how tough it was and how every time he went to the ground, how hard it was to get back up, but how this was so exciting because he finally showed everybody how tough he was and how he could do it. This is just kind of par for the course. I know it sounds bad. This is the best case option for what we're talking about with Xavier Worthy. If we are talking about him not going on the IR, so he's not going to be out for the 4 games. So basically, you have Rice suspended and Worthy out for almost an overlapping period of time. I think the best case scenario for this is that Xavier Worthy plays at the end of the month against the Ravens. If you sit him out these 2 weeks, there's no scenario in which he's playing on Sunday. He's not practicing. You ain't playing a week after this injury, not at 5'11", 165 pounds. I don't think you need him to play against the Giants. If they're at the point that they can't beat the Giants without Xavier Worthy, they got bigger problems than we're willing to discuss. That game at the end of the month against the Ravens at home, a really important AFC tiebreaker, they need that game. It'd be really, really good to have it. That's the date that I would target trying to get Xavier Worthy back and try to throw him back into the mix, into the fold when discussing this offense. Coming up on the other side, we'll be joined by the quarterback. Actually, no, my bad. Rob is the way he was waving at me. Let me know that, no, we are not supposed to do that. All right, Rob, hit the button.
He is QB1.
And at quarterback from Texas Tech, number 15, Patrick Mahomes.
He is a 3-time Super Bowl champion.
Mahomes moving to his left laterally, chased, holding it, and gets out of bounds and up the sideline. He's not out of bounds yet. He's at the 10, inside the 10. He dives for the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City, a remarkable acrobatic scramble on a 27-yard run, maybe the best play yet.
2-time MVP and 3-time Super Bowl MVP.
Patrick Mahomes with Mahomes magic, starting left, peeling right, 3 drives, 3 touchdowns for the Chiefs.
Every Tuesday at 3:15, you can hear him right here with CDOT, exclusively on your home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan. Here's Patrick Mahomes.
My apologies, it's week one for me too. Let me tell you guys that Patrick Mahomes' appearance on the show each week is brought to you by Telly Tire and Auto Centers. Winning starts with a great drive. Since 1942, Telly's certified techs have delivered complete car care with top brand tires and expert auto service. Keep your drive going. Take it to Telly. Earlier today, I got an opportunity to catch up with the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, and I have to admit, the first question is a little bit self-serving. So you guys have probably seen the video. They've been giving out these really cool invitations for a very special night at 1587 Prime. Nick Wright got one. Aaron Andrews got one. How could your boy not get one?
You know, man, I signed them, but I wasn't in charge of who they went to. I actually had to make a call so that I could get my own autographed football of me and Travis. So I was kind of blindsided as much as you were.
Yeah, man, I like crab cakes, too. I'm very happy to go. I don't know if you got extra room for 2 more people, but sign me up.
Yeah, for sure, man. I'll get with the main manager, Travis Kelce, and see if he's got a reservation for you.
Cool, man. I appreciate that. What is it like to see so many people around the city showing love and support to you guys' steakhouse?
No, man, it's been really cool, man. Just to have something in Kansas City that you can call your own, and try to do something to give back to the community in any way. And we're super excited about the steakhouse and the restaurant. And the hope is that it'll be here long term, and a lot of people will get to enjoy it.
For people who plan on going next week to the opening, what would you suggest? What have been your favorite things on the menu to try?
I think my favorite thing so far has been the Big Red. It's a smash burger that Coach Reed had his input on. And so, you know, a smash burger by Coach Reed, it's hard to miss.
Tell me a little bit about this drink I saw. It's like Taylor Swift inspired. It looked real whimsical. Tell me about this.
I'm not a big liquor drinker myself, but for everybody I've heard, it's a really good drink. And obviously we wanted to have an ode to Taylor and how important she is to not only us, but this city as well. And so I think people will be super excited to get it. And it has the theatrics and stuff like that I think people will love, but it's also a really good drink as well. And so it's something that I'm sure it will be ordered a ton, and it'll be a bestseller at the 1587.
Right now, we're talking to the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes. We'll get to football here coming up in a bit. There's a lot of things to talk about since the last time that you and I got a chance to talk. You were prominently displayed on the Kingdom. It makes sense you're the quarterback of the team. This isn't the first time that you've had cameras in your house and around your family and kind of videotaping your life. What is that like? Is that something that you can ever get used to?
I think if you have the right people that are filming it, you can get used to it. You know, I have a great team of people around me, and the people that film me are people that I can fully trust and I can be myself around. And so it's obviously different having cameras there and stuff like that, but you get used to it after a while, and it helps when you have a lot of good people that are the ones filming you and they're not trying to make you look bad or anything like that.
You always talk about doing it the right way, not just by yourself and as an organization. As I watched that documentary, I learned a lot about why you're so successful. I also learned a lot about why the team is so successful and why you guys have been able to accomplish the thing that you have over the last 5-6 years or so.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, I think you get a good insight on the whole organization, the whole team, and what it takes to be great. You know, this league, it's so even. I mean, that's how they make it, is that you're going to be even the games. The teams are closely matched, and it's about the little things that you do on the side to put you over the edge. And we got a lot of guys on our team that do that, man. They give everything they have to this football team and to this city, and that's the reason we've won as many games as we've won, is because we got a lot of guys that are all in every single day.
Last thing about this, I heard the director speak on this. You were pretty open and vulnerable about some of your things that have happened off the field. We don't have to go back and go through all of it. What made the choice for you to decide, hey, this is the time that I want to speak openly about these things?
I just want people to see that it's not all winning Super Bowls and driving cool cars and having money and all that different type of stuff, that we're all just people and that we're all moving about life the same way. And there's different ways and different alleys on how you go through life. But at the end of the day, you just have to make the most of what you have and enjoy the people around you. And I think if you do that, you can have a successful life, if that's winning Super Bowls or if that's going to work 8 to 5 every single day. You can live a great life having the great people around you.
Right now, we're talking to the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, joining us on the show for the first time this season. Did you get a chance to go around Brazil at all? Did you get a chance to go outside the hotel, explore a little bit?
We did not. You know, we were there a short amount of time, but I was very thankful for how the people of Brazil treated us and the accommodations that we got. I mean, it was really cool to be down there and see the fans and how energetic they were and just appreciative of us for being down there to play a football game. And it was really cool just to be a part of that atmosphere and to see what Brazil is like. But I didn't get to do a lot of the touristy things. But I had a good time while I was there.
We talked a lot about the Chiefs Kingdom, and you've seen them everywhere. They go to Vegas. They go to Los Angeles. Like, they are ones to travel and show up. What was it like to see the support in Brazil for this game?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I'll remember forever, you know. I mean, obviously the result wasn't what we wanted, but just seeing the fans and how much they cared, and you see the Chiefs jerseys, and you know that we travel well. I mean, Chiefs Kingdom is truly one of a kind, and it really was cool to see. You go out that tunnel that first time and all the red jerseys, and from the people of Brazil and the people that travel down to the game as well, and it showcases that all the things that we do and playing the game the right way has kind of traveled worldwide now, and people are noticing it, not only because of us winning, but because of the people that we are.
You guys had a 2.5 hour delay. You guys had a 10-hour, 12-hour flight, traveled to and from the stadium. How difficult is it to keep your routine and what you do to usually get ready for a game or even a road game in a situation in which your routine is completely thrown off?
You know, I mean, I think that's something that we've become accustomed to. I mean, when you play in the NFL, you have to accept those challenges. Obviously, you try to stay as close to your routine as well, but you have to be able to adjust on the fly. That's kind of everybody, and everybody has the same challenges, every single team. And so for us, it's about staying as close as we can to our routine and then trying to go out there and play our best football. And we obviously didn't do that in the first half of this last game, but that's no excuse. I mean, at the end of the day, everybody's dealing with those same challenges, and that's part of being in the NFL.
You mentioned having to adjust on the fly. You guys had to do that from a game plan perspective. You maybe thought Rashee Rice was going to play. The suspension ends up being the early portion of the season. You then end up losing your then number one receiver, Xavier Worthy, over the game. How difficult was it to adjust your game plan on the fly with the amount of injuries that you guys have right now in the wide receiver room?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that you have to be able to adapt to in the NFL. I mean, obviously, those are two guys that are big on our football team. And so I think as the guys got settled in that into that first half and into the second half, you saw guys being able to adjust and make plays. And I was proud of how they stepped up, especially in the second half. So, I mean, when anybody goes down on any team, I mean, there's adjustments that have to be made. And that was a big receiver for us. But at the same time, I thought guys stepped up and made plays in big moments and gave us a chance to compete and try to get a win.
You guys ran 11 run plays in Friday's game. How do you get the run game more involved now with the lack of Worthy, just having some more balance in the offense?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of everywhere. I mean, obviously, we got to do better at running the ball when we have the opportunities to do it. I thought Pacheco did a good job of making some big runs happen when he got the opportunities. But same with me. I got to be able to get us into the right play. And whenever a run play is called, to give them the guys a chance to go out there and prove while we call the run play, and not trying to get too greedy or too happy with me trying to make a play every single time. So just trusting in my teammates. But the run game's important. I mean, it's important on every single football team, and so it'll be something that we have to be better at going up against a good defense this week.
Usually as a quarterback, you know, you get out of bounds or you slide, you're trying to avoid the contact. You moved into the contact. That usually doesn't happen. It looked to me like you were kind of trying to set a tone for the rest of the roster for that drive.
Yeah, I think I just want to be a competitor at the end of the day. Obviously, you have to protect yourself and get out of bounds when you need to get out of bounds. But I think you saw on that drive, not even the second run or the third run, I wasn't really thinking about going out of bounds too much on that drive. But it's a long season, so I'll try to get back to getting back out of bounds as the season goes on. But you definitely want to spark and give your team a chance to win the football game, and I thought it was needed then.
Right now, we're talking to the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, for a few more minutes. Pat, in the Super Bowl, you guys came out flat. You mentioned that you guys came out flat in this game against Brazil. I don't have to tell you about the opponent that you're playing on Sunday. Very good. You obviously know them well. How do you avoid falling into that trap 3 straight games?
Yeah, I think you have to learn from your past mistakes. And obviously, we've done these last few games, and it's cost us. And so we have to learn as a team that we have to go out with our best effort from the first snap all the way through the last snap. And so we've done good about that in my entire career. We've had a few bad games here back-to-back now. And so how are guys going to respond? You know, I know Coach Reed's going to respond by having a great week of practice and pushing us to be even better. But as a team, we have to respond and showcase who we are. And if we don't, we'll lose to a good football team. And so we're going to have to play our best football if we want a chance to win this football game.
Pat, I know you got to take one game at a time, and each week is the same. Does this game mean even more given what happened to you guys in February?
Not necessarily. I mean, it's another football game against a good football team. I think if anything, it means more because we lost that first game. You know, it's hard to come back from an 0-2 record, and I mean, teams have done it before, but it makes it a lot difficult for the rest of the season. So for us, it's important to go out there and play our best football and try to beat a good football team, because not only would that help as far as our record right now, but it'll give guys confidence going into the rest of the season.
That's one thing that I'm really curious about. You just mentioned it. Like, the historical playoff odds, if you start 0-2, are not great. You guys have never started 0-2 in your career. I'm really curious to see how you guys as a team respond and what kind of energy you guys come out with.
Yeah, I know. The hope is that we don't start 0-2, so we'll focus in on trying to play our best football, because that's what it's going to take to win against a really good football team.
That is the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, joining us on the show today, getting you ready for a Super Bowl rematch as the Chiefs open up their home schedule on Sunday against the Philadelphia Eagles. Pat, once again, man, happy to have you join us this season, man. Look forward to catching up with you next week.
I appreciate you, man.
Absolutely. That is the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes. His appearance on the show this week is brought to you by Telly Tires and Auto Centers. Winning starts with a great drive. Since 1942, Telly Tires certified techs have delivered complete car care with top brand tires and expert auto service. Keep your drive going. We'll react to what Pat said coming up on the other side. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. Watch the show on YouTube by subscribing to the 965 YouTube channel. The Drive brought to you by DM Entry Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Entry Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 96.5 The Fan.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back into The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here with you guys on this wonderful, wonderful Wednesday. Happy to be here with you as we get you ready for week two as the Chiefs take on the Philadelphia Eagles. Earlier today, we were talking about one of the top stories right now in the National Football League, the Denver Broncos. They are building a new stadium. So they got the stadium that they currently play in was completed in 2001, and they are already beginning the process of a new Mile High Stadium. But they're doing something a little bit different with the finances when it comes to the stadium.
Obviously, when it comes to these new stadiums we're seeing built across the country, we've seen a lot of them turn towards domes where they can hold concerts and other things throughout the winter. Any guess early on in this process what this new stadium might look like?
Yeah, they have said, the Broncos have said it will be retractable roof. You know, whether it's fully convertible or retractable like other stadiums, they haven't said yet. But it's still going to be natural grass. Greg Penner did not want AstroTurf. His players do not like AstroTurf. The less give on the AstroTurf, but it's going to be the type of open and closed stadium where they can still be able to grow natural grass. So it's going to be that. And one other thing I should say, no taxes here, no public funding. It will be privately funded by the Penners. They're going to, you know, it's going to be, I would think, upwards of $5 billion or so. And they're going to pay the whole freight. The city's going to pay for a lot of the road, the infrastructure as far as, you know, the access, the roads, the exit ramps, provide the, you know, the light rail, the public transportation and those kind of things. The state has sold the 58-acre parcel of Burnham Yard. Denver Water has sold its 25-acre plot to the Broncos for the use of this stadium. But no taxes, no public funds. Probably will have some PSLs, those private seat licenses, to help defray the cost. It's you can call it a user tax. Only the season ticket holders will pay for it. You basically buy the license for the right to buy your seats.
I mean, I think what you're going to see in a stadium like Denver's, in which the public is not directly helping pay for the creating of the stadium, I think what they're going to do is they're just going to factor that money now into it. Well, we expect to sell X number of season tickets. We expect to generate $200, $300 million based off the creation of these personal seat licenses. That is the money that we are now directly going to put into the building of the stadium. So yes, I think he is absolutely correct. They are not going to take your money on the front end, but trust me, they are going to take at least some of your money on the back end. That is just the way that these stadiums get built. This is actually a really, really good deal for the public. The reason we're talking about this is now if you look in the Chiefs division, every other team is either in the process of building a new stadium like the Broncos or have recently built a new stadium. The Chargers have SoFi Stadium and the Raiders have Allegiant Stadium. Are the Chiefs going to be the one team in their division that is just sitting there with a older stadium? You take a look at other divisions around the National Football League. The NFC North, we just saw them on Monday Night Football, the Bears. They have been going back and forth about building a new stadium for them. Other than them, Green Bay, a team with an older stadium. A lot of these teams are now moving on from their old stadium, and now we're at the point where stadiums that were built in the late 90s, early 2000s, are now getting renovations or brand new stadiums. These things ain't lasting 50, 60 years anymore. You're lucky to get 30, 35 years out of some of these stadiums. The Broncos, they will play in their current stadium for exactly 30 years before they move to a new stadium. Now, it's a little bit different. They're not taking new taxes. They're using some of that money to pay for infrastructure things around it. But Rob, we're not going to see the shelf life for a Kauffman Stadium or an Arrowhead. That just doesn't exist anymore. The Royals have played in that stadium since the 70s. The Chiefs have played in that stadium for the 70s. And even though they've done renovations, it's not like what happened in Chicago. Remember that one year where the Bears had to play in Illinois' home stadium? They couldn't play there, kind of like what happened this past season with KU. The Chiefs didn't have to do that. The Royals didn't have to do that. They played in the middle of renovation. So they have played in that structure continuously since the early 70s. That building has held up time after time. That point in American history is just over. Stadiums don't last 60, 70 years anymore. There's no more Wrigley's. There's no more Fenway's. That's just not the way these teams want to operate anymore.
I feel like maybe Kansas City fans were late to the curve here, because our entire life we had both stadiums, and we're in our 30s. We had both stadiums, and they were great. I feel like both owners now on both sides of the parking lot are realizing it's time to upgrade because everyone upgrades. That's what's happening. Me and you earlier today getting ready for the show were kind of sitting in the newsroom, and Pat McAfee's show was talking about Tennessee is getting a new stadium. The Titans became a franchise in what, 1998, 1999? I just saw that Steve McNair documentary about a year ago. I think it was 1998. They've played in the same stadium since 99. 26 years later, they're out. They're getting a new stadium. It's going to be state-of-the-art. It's going to be, hey, we can have concerts. It's going to be all that stuff. Arrowhead and Kauffman are, and no disrespect to either of them, are relics. They are not what people do anymore. Nowadays, it's 20 years and done in pro sports. And I think across the landscape of both sports, you are seeing that. And I think Kansas City fans, while they hated the entire political drama, all the stuff ahead of the vote with the stadiums, is realizing, yeah, getting new, renovated, or fancy new stadiums is kind of the norm right now in pro sports in America. You don't have to like it, but it is the norm.
Text line 913-586-7965. Want to find this text really quickly. CDOT, more and more, it is becoming the norm for these stadiums to be privately funded, and we should hold John Sherman to the exact same standard. That's just not true. That's not the norm for a lot of these stadiums. To my understanding, Robin, tell me if I'm wrong, there's three of these stadiums now in the country. And I'm talking like not just in the NFL, I'm talking around American professional sports. There are three that are now privately funded. SoFi was privately funded. The Broncos, it sounds like their stadium is going to be privately funded. And where the Clippers play. Those are
was
the only.
Dallas? I don't remember about Dallas.
Cowboy Stadium probably is.
I think Cowboy Stadium was. But I'd
have to look it up, but I'm guessing that's another one that's privately funded. There's just not that many of it. I also think it's really, really important to note the owner of the Broncos is wealthy in a way that not many other owners are wealthy. So, for example, if you look at Clark Hunt's net worth, now I know we're talking about billions of dollars. According to Forbes, Clark Hunt's net worth is $1.6 billion. The owner of the Broncos' net worth is $118 billion. So I'm not saying that Clark Hunt is poor by any means. And I think his net worth is obviously larger than that because he owns the Chiefs. So tomorrow, if they sold the Chiefs, he would come out pretty well if he decided to sell the Chiefs. $118 billion? You can move a little bit differently when we're talking about paying for these things. Steve Ballmer bought the Clippers in cash. He didn't have to sell anything. He had the money to be able to buy the Los Angeles Clippers outright. He also did the same thing with the land and to build them the stadium because he didn't want to play in the Lakers stadium anymore. Some of these owners got a lot of money. Some of these owners have a lot of money compared to the other people that have a lot of money. So I understand why the Broncos, if I'm worth $118 billion, yeah, I'll put up the two to build and completely own the stadium and do essentially what happened in Atlanta. all of these teams are now moving to the model where they want to create Battery Park. They want to own the stadium. They want to own the hotels. They want to own the restaurants around them. And they want it to be a 365 money-making venture for them. Well, when you got $118 billion, you can throw $2 billion away on this project when you just bought the team less than 3 years ago. Coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, if you miss Patrick Mahomes, we'll play it for you again. We're off early today because of the Royals. Keep it right here. So drive.
This is Wyatt Thompson from K-State, and you're listening to The Drive with CDOT right here on 96.5 The Fan and the Odyssey app.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
Browns
why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into the show. We'll get back to football here coming up in just a bit. I want to share a story with you guys to just get a temperature check on what we're talking about. So there was a news story that came across my timeline, and it said that currently nearly half of adults have started to make the change to kids' meals for smaller and cheaper portions. Now, I want to be very clear about this. If you're getting the kids' meal because time is hard right now and that's all you got, this portion of commentary is not directed at you. Hey, keep living your life. If all you got is $350 and you're just trying to make do, I get it. I understand. Times is hard out here. I'm not judging you. But Rob, you're telling me that there's people that sit among us, grown men, that are going to an Outback Steakhouse and ordering the kids menu for the smaller portion of steak as an adult? I can't advocate that. I get it for the ladies. You know, we've all dated somebody that's just not really a heavy eater. Maybe you're currently with that person. You know, it doesn't matter. She's just not going to eat all of the food. She always has leftovers. And at some point you were like, hey, why are you going to order that? You know, you're not going to finish all of that. Why don't you get something more, you know, appetite appropriate? Rob, are you doing this? It says 44% of adults are now ordering the kids menu because they just want a smaller, cheaper portion. Are you going to Five Guys and you getting the junior burger? Please don't tell me you're getting a junior burger from Five Guys.
I am not, but I will say there's two different things. If you're kind of like in a snack mood, like there have been days where like, hey, I had breakfast, I'm out doing stuff, I kind of want a quick snack before dinner, I might grab a Happy Meal, but I'm never going to sit down at Applebee's or, you know, Grozzo's or whatever and get the kids meal there. But I think it's fair to grab a kids meal fast food item because it's real quick, cheap, fills you up. But I think it's out of bounds to go to sit down at whatever your favorite restaurant is, pick a place, and you go, yeah, I want the kids' meal chicken strips. That feels, and you order a beer with it. That feels way out of bounds.
To me, you gotta be doing this if you're ordering on the app. You gotta be doing this. Like, I'm sitting here reading it right now. I order the Texas Roadhouse kids' meal. I get the 6-ounce sirloin steak, a side and a drink for $10. Can't beat it. I can't advocate for that. I really can't. I can't advocate for that. You're a 36-year-old man. You don't have kids. And now you're going up and you're ordering the kids' steak? Come on now. Sometimes my male ego, it won't even let me get the small because I just don't like the way it feels in my hand. You know how when you go to the movies and they try to hand you that little dainty bag of popcorn, you think, hey, man, don't hand me that. You got to get the medium just off principle. I know I ain't the only person that feels like that. Like when you get the small pizza and they bring it out and it's that little personal pan pizza, hey, man, don't give me that little baby pizza. I don't want that. I can't advocate for this. This has to be a foul. For all the things that the text line pulls your man card for, being a 41-year-old man ordering off the kids menu has to be something that is a violation of the man code. It has to be.
I think if you're in a drive-thru, maybe it's a little different, but maybe the app, I'll agree with you on the app, but If you go to Texas Roadhouse for the texter and you sit down and you're like, hey, I want the drink, the side, and the small steak for $10. That no. Now, I will say this. If you're Texas Roadhouse and you know this is happening, why don't you start offering a special or, have a little section of the menu for cheap eats or whatever? Because clearly people are doing this. So find a way to profit on it and not have the stigma of people ordering off the kids menu, because you should not be ordering off a kids menu.
I'm telling you right now, if this is the situation, you got to start showing me a picture of your family, man. I'm serious. You got to start showing me a picture of your family. Show me your little one before I let you order off this menu. I don't see no kids in the back of this. I can't even imagine going to a steak place and getting that little baby 6-ounce steak. You guys are getting that for dinner? You're getting a little baby 6-ounce and a little scoop of mashed potatoes? Come on now. I can't do that. Not at all. I don't want no parts of that. That seems like stealing to me. That's what it feels like. It feels like stealing to me.
It would be real sick if you do that and then you order a beer. If you're gonna kids menu steak with a scoop of mashed potatoes, and you're like, and that's what I mean. They say, we'll have a drink. You're like, I don't want the drink.
You go home to wash it down with a Blue Moon.
Yeah, or if you're there and you're like, I want a jumbo marg. You're sick.
Yeah, something's going on here. Can I give you a stat? Yesterday, my banner was I was carrying the run the football banner for the Chiefs. That's a very important banner. I will continue. Don't worry. We still got more time. I will continue to tell you the importance of them running the football successfully against the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday if their plan is to win. Do you know how good Justin Herbert was against the blitz last week? Justin Herbert on plays that the Chiefs blitzed, 11 of 14 for 173 yards and a touchdown last week. He destroyed the Chiefs when the Chiefs brought additional pressure. You're used to Spags' defense being able to get one or two blitzers home that can potentially change the course of a game. It's a big third down. Maybe you don't get the sack, but you hit Herbert, it disrupts the pass, and now that gets you off the field. Maybe it creates a tip ball that now you can turn into a takeaway for your team. You're used to the Chiefs being able to dial up creative blitzes and get there. That was just not the case. So you got to give the Chargers a lot of credit with their offensive line. This is the team that lost their left tackle in training camp and performed very, very well against a pretty good defensive line for the Kansas City Chiefs. Everything for the Eagles starts with, they have the best offensive line in the National Football League. That's how Jalen Hurts has been able to be so successful. That's how Saquon Barkley ran for 2,000 yards last season. A player that I think is going to be a much bigger factor in their offense than he was in week one is A.J. Brown. You cannot expect on a week-in, week-out basis that A.J. Brown is going to have one catch, one target, and be a complete non-factor in the offense the way that he was against the Cowboys. I don't have to tell you guys, we spent 2 weeks breaking this Eagles team down. They aren't much different than they were the last time that these two teams know each other. But step number one for the defense has to be the ability to create pressure. So whether that's winning matchups with your front four and being able to get after the quarterback, or it's when you dial up a blitz and Spags is going for it, you got to get there and you got to get home. Your secondary is not good enough to send pressure and it not work. And as you could see, based on how well Herbert played, he was carving that defense up. They blitzed 14 times. Herbert was 11 for 14, 173 yards, and a touchdown against the blitz. If that's what we're talking about on Sunday against Jalen Hurts, the Chiefs are not winning that game. If they can't get pressure and it is a very similar outcome where your quarterback is constantly under stress and duress and the Eagles quarterback is not and he is comfortable, can do all the different things, he will carve you up because they just have so many weapons for the ability to carve you up. Pass rush is where this game is going to be won on both sides of the ball. The Eagles pass rush was dominant in the Super Bowl. The Chiefs pass rush, for the most part, was non-existent in the Super Bowl. Coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, if you missed it, we'll play the best of our conversation with Patrick Mahomes. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.